Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Dave, Jude, we do it Monday through Friday anyway, and except for next Tuesday, which is Christmas, I'm told. Except that what we do every day when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. These are not the words of my guest, Dave Jude. These are my words, and it's going to set the tone for what we're going to talk about today for a while anyway. Dave Jude joins us from Washington, D.C., a senior analyst with the World Perspectives. And I can remember 20 years ago when I started doing this, I would go to public hearings, I would go to county commissioner meetings, and I would see farmers who raise corn and soybeans stand up and talk about why we don't need this livestock operation in my county. We have ethanol to consume corn. Well, you know what? We need every market possible. And today we are going to talk about that. Apparently, the consumption of corn through livestock agriculture is a positive thing. How the heck are you, Dave?
I'm great. How are you, Trent? Good to talk to you again.
I had to get that little tidbit off my chest. You know, it's been hanging there for 20 years, and you just got to, you know, sometimes you got to clear your throat. So I did it.
Hey, it's always nice to get a little mild I told you so in there.
Wait a minute. Is that what I was doing?
Sounded like it to me.
Yeah.
That's just me.
So who the heck is the World Perspectives? Is it World Perspectives, Inc.?
World Perspectives, Inc. It's an ag consulting firm that was founded back in 1980 by a woman named Carol Brookins. She worked at E.F. Hutton and noticed that the Russian grain embargo kind of caught the market flat-footed. So she developed a MarketWire daily newsletter, which we still do today, although with internet it's much different looking, and that we analyze the fundamentals of the feed grain markets and include in that a policy perspective. And we like to say we're at the nexus of markets and policy. And in addition, we do a lot of projects, custom analytical work like we did for the U.S. Meat Export Federation on the value of red meat exports to corn.
Yeah, what the heck is up with a guy named Joe Sheely needing to be involved in getting you and I back together? I don't get that.
It's holiday season. I think he was trying to reconnect old friends or something. I don't know. But
no, he's trying to prove his value to the MEF, Meat Export Federation. Like,
well,
a bureaucrat.
That's my next study, is the value to meat exports of Joe Sheely.
You got somebody going to fund that?
His mother.
Yeah, there's a reason he left Nebraska. All right, we'll just leave it at that. So, I shared the information that Meat Export Federation posted because I thought it was timely and really good. There is a value to livestock consuming corn, is there not?
There's a huge value. Always has been, always will be. And you mentioned, 20 years ago, the emphasis on ethanol. And obviously, that's a big consumer of corn, too. But ethanol profitability at the end of the day also relies pretty heavily on being able to sell the distillers' grains. And meat exports, beef exports in particular, bring a lot of value back to, the whole net margin on ethanol production as well. So it's truly kind of a win-win situation for everybody.
Through that craze of building ethanol plants all across the center portion of the nation, I felt like too many times, even the people that were involved, unless they were directly involved in the ethanol plant, lost sight of adding value, even if it's just, $65 a ton or whatever the case may be for that distiller's product coming out of there. That's turned out to be a make or break deal for the plant.
It's it's become very huge now, and beef cattle, dairy cattle too, but on the meat side, beef cattle consume a lot and pork a little bit less. It's not a great feedstuff for poultry, but there's still some fed. But it's become a big driver, and I kind of liken the whole economic scenario to going to an auction. Would you rather have five bidders sitting there, or would you rather have 25 sitting there? And it's gonna help everybody. It's gonna send the market price signals. It's gonna impact production. And it's just another outlet for corn use, but also for the byproduct use of ethanol.
Speaking of U.S. Meat Export Federation, yesterday, this is where I found the numbers, obviously. You have exact numbers on the impact in 2018. Can you share those with us?
What we did, just to give you a quick background, is we did this back in 2015, and that was kind of a bad year. We had lower production on beef and pork, and a high dollar, some pretty high domestic meat prices, but at the end of the year, we really saw pork prices start to take off. Pork exports start to take off. So that's when USMEF decided to look at this issue. And then since then, we've had a large increase in exports. We're at record pace through October. The numbers just came out the other day. But in looking at the original projections that were done by USDA and what we've updated them to, we're going to use about 450 million bushels more of corn than we would have been able to predict back in 2015. So just this year, by the time this year, if everything going on pace, beef and pork, I was going to use about 460 million bushels of corn. That's about $1.6 billion to corn, about 2 million tons of DDGs, which is about $290 million worth of DDG use. That at the end of the day adds about $450 million to the gross margin of an ethanol mill. All combined, that's almost 15 million tons of corn and DDGs that are going to be fed, which is $1.9 billion to the corn sector. At the end of the day, that's 3.9 million acres plus of equivalent of corn bushels and DDG equivalent bushels.
How would that compare to 2017? Obviously, that's an increase.
It's an increase. I haven't gone through all the numbers, but if you look today, volume-wise, beef is up about 9% year-to-date on volume. A fed steer, fed heifer, fed steer is going to use 34 bushels of corn and 760 plus pounds of DDG. So you can get an estimate of that when you see a 9% volume export increase. Pork, it's a little tighter. And this goes back to your point, Trent, about ethanol and DDGs. So pork exports, despite tariffs in Mexico, despite, losing the Chinese market, pork exports, they're down seasonally month to month, but the year-long trend, we're still up 1% in volume, but we're only up 1% in value. Look at corn, or at beef, rather, we're up 9% in volume, but we're up 17% in value. And that shows the point that what exports do is bring value to cuts and even variety meats and offal that are undervalued here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects a feeder's bottom line, and that affects his ability to pay for corn. And that's a very important part of this formula that comes from exports.
Dave Judé, my guest. We will be back with more Rural Routes, and we'll talk about the economy more after this. Superior Livestock Auction with an internet sale tomorrow. Details about the cattle that we'll be selling can be found at www.superiorlivestock.com. That's the same place that you find your rep. Market your cattle the Superior way. The bell ringer just around the corner. Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside Dave Judé, joining us from DC World Perspectives, Inc., with a bit of a plug for the work of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dave, I want to expand upon where we closed in that last segment because, you know, I've had a crash course in trade for the past 3 years. It did a lot of good for me seeing the bigger picture when I went with Governor Ricketts, my governor, state of Nebraska, to Japan for a week. But we have people that find numbers and portray trade, exports, imports in one way or another. You really just brought it all home because when in 2018, when we have pork volume up by 1%, and value up by 1%. That's a huge success story for all of the challenges and the long-term strategy that we've implemented in trade. Beef value up by 17%. And the one component that I find that too many producers don't really grasp is, you know, it doesn't matter how many pounds you sell to Mexico, whatever the case may be. It's the dollar and the amount of value that you sell to another country. And when you compare those numbers, beef by volume up by 9%, by value up by 17%, man, we should all be bragging about that. That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And it's all, you know, export marketing is, it all goes back, not to get all nerdy, but it goes back to economics one and comparative advantage. And, you know, there's things that people want that we don't want here, and there's things that we want that people don't want where they're produced. And, you know, like the beef values have been driven by, like, organ meat to places like Egypt, cheek meat, tongues, that sort of stuff, pig feet, pig ears, going to different markets. That starts adding up. You know, I think that the Chinese market for the variety meat cuts from pork that we don't really use here, I think they import something like 50-60% of our production, not our exports, but our production. And that adds $6 to $8 a head, just being able to sell things that are essentially going to be given away here.
2017, the success story in beef exports in the United States had to be South Korea, not?
Absolutely. South Korea is going gangbusters. And it was real interesting because then I presented the findings of this research at the USMEF meeting, and they had their representative from Korea come and give an overview of the market. And it was kind of interesting, aside from all the numbers and facts, but it was kind of interesting to hear her say where, you know, X number of years ago when this all started and we started promoting U.S. beef in Korea, she was kind of felt ostracized and a little nervous in her neighborhood, not really wanting her neighbors to know what she was doing promoting U.S. Meat in Korea. You remember all the trade protests that, you know, over the years with Korean farmers and everything. And now she kind of hint that she feels like a rock star because U.S. beef is so valued and so popular, and demand is so high, and it's spreading all over the market. And you don't, you know, we talked about the economics, and at the end of the day, that's what drives this, but you don't do it without the marketing and organizations that are promoting U.S. commodities. So that's the importance of our commodity group structure here in the U.S.
So usually it just pays to be lucky, Dave. You referenced the protest in the streets. It just so happens at that time, a friend of mine, Lindsay Tychester, who is now back in Nevada, but at the time was a graduate student studying meat science at West Texas A&M University, Canyon, Texas. And she was in South Korea that day that it was the hottest. And she actually joined me on the air, and we could literally hear the ruckus outside because U.S. beef was coming to South Korea. That wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. And then compare that to, you know, some of the videos that the MEF gal, Jihei is her name, brought. And they were showing, like, freezer cases in a restaurant. I mean, huge. They look like, you know, the size of a medium-sized swimming pool. And at a popular grocery store over the weekend before some Korean holidays, people were stacked 3-4 deep waiting to reach in to grab, both pork and beef. And it's pretty tremendous.
So what's the overall lesson that we can apply in other trade negotiations with this?
Well, you stumped me on that one. I mean, I think perseverance is a key element to anything. I think you got to ask for the sale, right? It's as my dad used to say, shaving is like selling. If you don't do it every day, you're a bum.
Wait a minute. Whoa. The picture that I saw of you lately, your dad's thinking you're like a homeless bum now.
Yeah, well, I've shaved my beard, trimmed it down from that.
Okay.
There you go. But so I think, you know, I think perseverance, I think asking for the sale, and that's the marketing efforts to do, and educating the consumer on the benefits and the qualities and the value that you get from U.S. commodities and specifically red meat, and having a, you know, obviously a vibrant, efficient, effective production center that can supply these products at a economic level that people will demand them. And I think that's the recipe. It's nothing magic. It's logical and it's hard work.
You left out have a better hand as an ag negotiator out of the U.S. Trade Representative's office.
Oh, I was going to get to that and build up since you and I first met each other through our mutual friend, Ambassador Greg Dowd.
Do we have to call him Ambassador Dowd now?
I only do in public.
Yeah. All right. Hank Wilger's trying to chime in on our call here. I don't know what's up with that. But anyway, one thing that's maybe really tough for us as we focus and get back on track here, Dave, is the organ meats. It's really tough for people in the States to see the value in this. You mentioned the pig feet, the heart, the liver, the tongue. You left out the pig bung. That's been a tremendous value product, and people in the U.S. are like, why would they eat that?
And I'm with them on that, but they do. I'm a kumbaya kind of guy, so I'm happy that we sell it to them.
Yeah, we don't give it away. We sell it to them. We add value. And the other thing that I wanted to get in before we get out of this segment is that you mentioned the education of the value and the nutrition. I struggle at getting that done here in the U.S. speaking English, because every day there's some myth that pops up about milk, meat, and egg consumption, and it's more than a full-time job now to keep people educated here at home, let alone in another country, another land, another culture.
Wow, that is the topic for a whole new daily radio program, the myth about the food production. And let's just put it this way, is food science is or food nutrition science is more complicated than even some of the so-called experts realize. And we're now finding out that a lot of this anti-meat and anti-saturated fat stuff came out of a study 40-some years ago that basically incomplete, and some of the surprising results were actually covered up. We based a lot of this anti-meat stuff just on a theory that was never really proven.
And it was brought to light by a 27-year vegetarian by the name of Nina Teicholz. We'll be back with the second half of Rural Route and talk about Education 101 with Dave Judet after this.